Ian Basrabi, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Oh, just put on the right mic, otherwise that's not going to work.
Good morning, Howard. I'm very well, thanks, and how are you?
Excellent, thank you. Dorf says, that's a weird song, my oh my.
What?
Okay. My, my. I thought it was a very, very nice
can't
song.
Can't please everybody.
No, can't please pretty much anybody, Zanati. Pretty much anybody. So, Ian, thank you for being here. You know, we were worried that, you know, perhaps that you'd be on another radio station considering your tweet yesterday.
No. Hold on. I just keep it interesting. But one thing I can say is that your music is far better than theirs.
Well, I would certainly hope so. I didn't realize, Zanati, did you know that you had to tweet which radio show you listen to?
Absolutely.
Sometimes, I don't know.
Do you ever do that?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. You're really on fire this morning.
I'm really on fire.
You know, I actually thought
I'm taking no prisoners today.
Even with the shots.
Yeah, exactly.
Shots fired.
When I walked in today, I actually thought Howard had a back pain because he's standing in the studio.
Right, that's just me being aggressive. That's just body language. It is 10 minutes past the hour of 8. A very, very good morning to you. What we haven't discussed tonight is we haven't spoken about is Helen Ziller.
Oh,
she's off Twitter. Took her a long time to leave, let us say. She sent out a tweet and, I of course sent it to Zanati and to Lindy Ware, and then there was another tweet and then another tweet and then another tweet, and seven tweets later I felt like this was Brexit all over again. You're either leaving Twitter or you're not, and then she eventually left but then opened up a private account, which I'm still waiting for approval to be accepted to follow her on, and I don't feel good about that, but alright.
She said she was leaving, and then turns out she's actually not leaving. She just opened another account.
So the one thing I will say is that what prompted it, first of all, I do think, although I've hated many of her tweets, I do think that she is particularly focused on or targeted on Twitter. I think people can say all sorts of things, but when Helen Ziller says it, I do think people react very badly. And I'm very clear that I think that she's done the DA tremendous damage through her tweets. So I think that she should have got off Twitter a very, very long time ago. But what prompted this was she put a photo of herself cooking in the kitchen during load shedding with a granddaughter or great-granddaughter, I'm not sure which one it was, and the child happens to be a black child who they've adopted or who's been adopted into Helen Ziller's family. And it's not something that they speak about. It's not certainly not done to be woke. Yeah. It's just it actually is who Helen Ziller is. And many of the tweets were, oh, wow, you're training her to be your domestic worker and training your slave.
On.
And things like that, and I think that was the final straw where she said, "You know what? Enough.
But you don't.
You can attack me.
Though.
Don't attack my child. I can cope with you attacking me. I cannot cope with you attacking a child, and especially a child."
No, man.
So I thought that is. I thought that was absolutely appalling.
Don't go for
really,
the child.
Really appalling. So there you have it. Hazel says, Zanati's laugh just makes the whole world a better place. I love it and I love her.
Aww, so
that
sweet.
Is, you see, at least you get loving messages.
Know, right?
Huh?
You're the only one that gets hate mail.
Yeah. I should be on the cover of Farmers Weekly. What did they say?
You should, gosh.
Gosh. Yeah. I mean, and that was the nicest thing somebody said to me today.
Farmers Weekly.
Yeah, because we're talking about a woman on Tinder.
Yes.
Who had to be kicked off. She was actually removed from Twitter.
She's an Instagram model.
Because she's an Instagram model, they said that everyone said that her account is obviously not real. Which it was real because she's basically too hot. As Zanati put it. But, so we were saying, you know, I said Zanati is also an Instagram model, you know, and then somebody suggested.
And I mean, I was also on the brink of being chased out of Tinder because
flames.
On the brink.
Yeah.
There were almost people about to report.
It was like a Helen Ziller. You were leaving, but you're not. You're getting kicked off.
Exactly. And then ultimately, of course, somebody suggested I'm also a model.
Farmers Weekly. I don't take as a farmer, Howard.
No, me neither.
When was the last time you plowed a field?
Or went to a farm. All right, at 8:14, Ian Basrabi, the future of work. How important are job titles? And it's so interesting because we have this conversation all the time at a company I'm involved with, and we, because Because on some level, they're ridiculous
yeah.
to need titles. In some ways, they are important because then it establishes areas of responsibility. But how important is it in the outside world?
So it's actually more important than I thought. And I just thought this was a... It actually started as a bit of a joke. And when I say we all know the typical joke of what are you going to do when you leave school? And it's lawyer, doctor, the whole thing. And then there was... something that I sent out yesterday, which was funny, but it's sad in a way. And I just want to read it to people because I think it's important to contextualize. So there's the conversation goes like this. Person's on a flight and the flight attendant says, is there a doctor on board? And the dad nudging his son next to him says, that should have been you, you know, and the person then says, the son says, not now, dad. And dad goes, not asking for a graphic designer to help, are they? You know, very sarcastically. And then the dad, then the son going to the dad, there's a medical emergency happening right now. So then the dad turns around and says, why don't you save him as a PDF and see if that helps, you know?
Oh, my
gosh. So I had a good laugh at that.
I love that joke. I mean, I've seen it before, yeah. But I have to say, in fact, a friend, it was quite strange that you sent it to me yesterday because another friend also sent it to me.
Yeah.
And I had seen it before that as well. And I said to my comment was, I've seen this, but I laugh every time because it is so,
rude.
No, but it's so indicative.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly the conundrum we find ourselves in is that Zanati finds that rude and insulting, and you and I laugh at it. But it's very
because we've been there. I remember. I certainly wasn't one of the kids who got 6 or 7 distinctions when we were at school. But I remember talking to somebody on the beach after our matric year, and somebody came up to this friend of mine who did get 6 or 7 distinctions, and they said to him, "What are you going to be doing?" And he says, "I think I'm going to be doing literature." And they said, "Oh, what a waste."
Mm.
What a waste. And that is very much, and I know it's in the Jewish community,
yeah.
very, very much a thing. Like, you've got these brains, what are you doing
yeah.
using it to do something that isn't either, well, it wasn't an actuarial science was a thing then, but I mean, not many people did it. Today it's actuarial science, it's medicine, it's engineering. Those are the things that yeah. are acceptable to do, in our weird and defined world.
As you mentioned, Howard, I also for a while thought this was just indicative of our community and the society we grew up in. But globally, this is actually something that is quite serious, and they actually give it a name. It's called occupational prestige or job prestige. And this is a way that sociologists describe the relative social class positions people have. So it refers to the consensus nature of rating a job based on the belief of its worthiness. So in other words, what it's saying is that occupational prestige is prestige independent of the particular individual who occupies a job, which is quite interesting, because what that says is just because you have a title or because you've got a job and that may be perceived to be more prestigious, you're on that echelon. So you may be a really good doctor, or you might be a really bad doctor, but because you're a doctor,
that doesn't matter.
Absolutely. And I think that's where the point about, does a job title define us or does it constrain us? And often people will turn around and say, well, if I turn around, now, if you think about it, anybody can become a CEO of a company.
Mm.
I can start a company.
Right, and you're the CEO.
I've got a consultancy and I'm the CEO.
Right, of
but
course. Yeah.
Relative to the CEO of a Fortune 500 or a JSE top 40 company, it's all relative. But do people see me differently because I'm a CEO? And the other thing which is also, how do people judge or how do people measure? Like, if you said that, and this is not taking away that doctors and lawyers and all that study for many years, but if I said that somebody with a lot of experience and a lot of studying, you would think a doctor. But think about a musician that studied for 10 years plus, and they're still trying to master that. That doesn't undermine their skills or their aptitude to study. So once again, our perception is because you studied for 10 years at university, you are on a high echelon. And for me, a lot of companies, and I'd love to hear what listeners think about this, but they're dropping titles. They're dropping titles in in exchange for your value, for what do you bring to an organization.
The problem with that is it's not easy for everybody to handle.
No.
So some people prefer to be in an environment, and it goes back to the subject that we spoke about, I mentioned it last week about swimming in your lane. It's a very, very dangerous, a very, very dangerous saying that's sort of crept into usage, because we shouldn't ever stay in our lane.
Yep.
Don't stay in your lane. I think it's a stupid thing to do. Mm. But actually, some people and some companies need people to stay in their lane, and there are people that need to know exactly where their lanes are. So they might prefer to work for a company where they have a manager who reports to a general manager, who reports to a division manager, who reports to a director, etc. And because everybody feels safe within, not everybody, some people will feel safe within that. It's titles, the issue of titles, of course, is very, very important. I was having a conversation with my one son, and he's had challenges during school, and I often speak about him. He's dyslexic. He's had real learning disabilities, but he will be an enormously successful person because he is massively, massively talented. He's a very refined EQ, very, very smart, a real problem solver. And we were sitting down and saying, okay, so which direction should you go when you start studying? And what I noticed was there is resistance to certain things because of perception.
Yeah.
And that is a big worry, because that means that perhaps we're not getting that message through, that it isn't about that you are a something. It's actually about how successful you are in your own life and how you can manage things, and if material success is important to you, how materially successful you are.
Yeah.
Because those things, you know, we shouldn't negate that. Those things are important. Mm. So it's a very, very real problem. I had a conversation with somebody last night, a parent at a school. Her child is in matric, and she called me very, very upset, talking about the fact that the school that this her particular child is at is very much focused on the matric kids who are going to get their A's.
Right.
But then beyond that, they're not interested in other kids because they're only going to go on to do A, B, C, D, and it doesn't reflect well on the school. So we've actually reinforcing that over and over again.
Absolutely. So Howard, an interesting point. So the school aspect is one thing, and I think that's where there are elements where it is improving, and we've seen how over the years we've started to see the electives coming through and children or students being given an opportunity to focus on their strengths or what they're passionate about. But I don't think it's enough. I think it needs to go a step further where there should be overall, and I hate this thing about that everybody should get an award or everyone should get a certificate.
Yes.
But I think there definitely needs to be a relook at the metric system in terms of how you measure success at awards evenings, etc.
I'd love your thoughts on it. 345-199 or 061-895-1019. How important are job titles to you? I'd love to hear from you. And our jobs play too big a role in defining us. I have more respect for a street cleaner who does his job honestly and conducts his life with integrity than a CEO who cheats in business and treats his staff badly. Absolutely right. Absolutely. The problem is that society doesn't grant the same respect to a street cleaner who lives a life of integrity versus a CEO without integrity. And we see this playing out over and over again.
And Howard, you're 100% right. And you've mentioned on many occasions how you've done business in the East. And if you look at Japan, in Japan, a university professor respects a person who works as a sanitary cleaner or part of the cleaning staff by bowing his head down, and both are paid nearly equal salaries. So once again, this is also controversial because we have a big, they call it the Gini coefficient, which is a very fancy word for saying that there's a disparity between the haves and the have-nots. And I don't like using that term, but it's a reality. And what happens now is society, by putting specific job roles and job titles on a pedestal, makes it very difficult for people to sit around the table and discuss what each person should be paid. And then you also start bringing yourself into this conundrum of saying, well, because this person is seen as a higher person, you can't pay them
right. And in fact,
less or more, you know?
Yeah, we had that conversation with Jake Shepherd last week, Friday, a week ago, where he spoke about this, I think he called it a power distance, something like that, that's exactly what that happened, what happens there is you stop hearing the idea or the concept and you actually look at the person. Maria says, our company has titles. It sorts out various staff into departments. However, it also creates a company culture. So, it is something. Hillel says, as an aside, my late father, who had the opposite approach to the 5 and 7 distinction going into medicine brigade, if all those brains go into the medical profession, what happens to them? And, Melinda says, I am a part of the generation where university wasn't a certainty. If you couldn't afford to go, you didn't. My family situation required that I would have to work ASAP, leading me to a 1-year diploma and the stigma of, oh, I'm only a .. No, I've never had a degree. Should it really be a gauge of my aptitude? Well, given that message, I can tell you that it's not, of course, a gauge of your aptitude, because it's easy to see who you are beyond that.
So that's an interesting point that Melinda raises, and once again, that also drives people into negativity, into a space where they feel, well, if they can't do something, then they're going to be a failure, then they're not going to succeed.
Mm.
And we've seen in the last decade or even shorter, how people have overachieved and over-succeeded beyond anybody's expectations, for the simple reason is that the world is different. And I say that, and that doesn't take away from the fact that that university is not important. It is important. We definitely need students, but we're even seeing universities like WITS are now starting to offer a coding course as part of their mechanical engineering degree.
You need to be able to get out there into the workplace. It is 8:31. Time is 8:33. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 Chai FM. Ian Basarabi joining us in studio, talking the future of work. And of course, we're talking about titles. So Ian, how do we balance the, because it is a reality, and the reality is that certain positions in companies, for example, are awarded with greater responsibility, greater remuneration, and therefore need to make some other decisions, greater decisions. So how do we balance all of that?
So Howard, we need to distinguish between an organizational hierarchy and a structure.
Okay.
A structure in an organization means that you can't run a company with nobody knowing what's going on with chaos. Exactly. First of all, it's not scalable and it's not sustainable. So one could argue, but that's how people are creative and innovative. Yes, for a certain and point in time. And I do a lot of sessions where they are a little bit crazy, because that's when you want to get people's, you want to get their brains opening up and thinking, out of the box and doing all of that. And we do that in the form of ideation sessions, but then we contain that. And the whole point about containing that is it's got to almost funnel. But that funnel or that approach doesn't mean that you've got to put people with titles. And often there's the saying that not all good people within an organization make good leaders. And often that's the problem we also have, is we promote a person because they've worked really well. You put them in a leadership position and they fail. So once again, you don't want to set people up for failure. So what I suggest, and what I've been recommending, and this is to a lot of like companies during their induction program or their first day on the job. It's kind of like the first day on the job. I say, how are you going to introduce Howard into the company? How are you going to? Are you going to say, bring all the staff together and say, hi, Howard. Hi, everyone. This is Howard. Howard's joining the team, and he's now the administration manager. He's filling the role of administration manager. That tells you nothing about Howard. That just says Howard is coming in to do all the admin.
Right.
Whereas whoever is introducing Howard, whether that's head of HR or the head of the company or that, should be saying, this is Howard and this is what Howard brings to our organization. These are his skills. This is why we've brought him on board. It just so happens that Howard's role in our organization is he's going to be looking after the administrative functions, but that's kind of just the role. It's not the title. You don't carry, because then what happens
and
is you
and
lose
to some
it,
extent, you know? this goes back to that conversation I was having about school. Is this conversation actually, or this type of education starts at a much, much younger age, yes, where we have different ways. And as you say, you don't encourage schools and you know, to give awards for somebody who, didn't miss 5 days of school in a row. And so they get an award for that. But it actually should be given around real things. And then it will, a lot of us are in that's yes, been ingrained and inculcated in us. How do we start to view things a little bit differently? So and are we starting to see things a bit differently?
I always have this my ethos and my kind of what I keep evangelizing to people is, it starts with you. You know, if you want to change, if you want something to change, you've got to change yourself. So as an example, what I do is, and I've been doing this a lot with my interviews that I do, that I'm doing on Chai, or when I'm introducing a person, is I say, send me your bio, but then send me the top three things that you that you want people to know about you. And I'll tell you, the most interesting thing is that the top three things are not in their bios. And that surprises me, but it upsets me, but it doesn't surprise me.
Okay,
because
explain that further.
So what it means is that a person writes a bio about themselves, they write something that tells people what they do.
Right.
So you can get a long list of what it's almost like a bio is a well-scripted job description. Whereas when I ask people just quickly to, and I don't say email it to me, I say WhatsApp me your top three things.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally different, because what it tells me is it tells me about them, about the individual, what makes them.
Who are they?
Mm-hmm. And for me, we need to look at each person as a whole, not just as a job description or as a, and in the same way that we don't judge people around age, sex, race, religion, or skin color, we shouldn't be judging people about their job title or their job role. But it has to start with you. You need to be proud of what you do, and you need to be able to talk about it with conviction. And when I say that, don't say, I'm a musician, or I'm a writer.
Right.
I'm just a writer, or I'm just a musician. You are a writer.
Or I never got a degree.
Absolutely. So for me, you shouldn't limit yourself to your job title. So I believe that a job title does constrain people. It should be more about what you value. And the fact is, you perform a role, but that's just a byproduct. You're actually more than that, and that's how people should value you.
Well, let me ask you this. Mm. Are some jobs more worthy of respect than others? You know, and I know we're talking and we're saying, no, you know, we should, we're saying we should respect everybody. And of course we should respect everybody. Respect is something dignity, actually, more than respect, is something that everybody's entitled to. And appreciation is something that everybody's entitled to for the job that they're doing. But the reality is that I do think sometimes, somebody who has worked a particular way or worked particularly hard and got to a certain point in his life, there's something that comes with that. And I know we don't like to say it, but it actually, there is an element of respect that is, you know, why do we stand up when a rabbi or a priest or an imam walks into a room? It's out of respect for their position
and just their journey in getting
their
there
journey.
As well.
So
appreciating how hard they've had to work.
And so I do think there's something to be valued in that. I don't know what the balance is, and I'd love our listeners' thoughts as well on 34519 or 061-895-1019. But I do think that respect is something that we do give to people. Mm. And I'm not sure that it's a bad thing. I think it's almost, I think we have to be careful not to almost create sort of this socialist environment where everybody is the same. Because, yes, because we're not the same.
Well that's what I'm saying.
And some of us are smarter than others and some of us are slower than others, but somebody else might be faster than, you know, there's different things that we're good at. I don't think I should be respected as an athlete.
Yeah.
Why are you laughing? You know, that is rude. I was making a very serious point here, Zanati. Wow. Wow. You see,
this is what I have. The Havana playing in my head now.
I make a serious point. You know, that was a very, very real moment for me there, Zanati.
Sheesh. Zanati, for 3 hours, how it's been on this high. And now you just took it.
Just took me down.
So, but how, on that note, and
don't say I can be a runner. I can be anything I want to be. I can't be, Ian.
So I think.
Genetically, my parents, you must see that very, very short people.
Yeah. So your mom and dad never said, Howard, you must go and be an athlete.
Mm, they would have liked to do something. Can you stop reading for a minute?
Exactly.
And
go just go run.
Yes. Put the Holocaust literature down. Anyway, that's another whole subject.
So we can discuss that on the couch.
I was going to say, we'll do that in therapy. Yeah.
Mm. But going back to the balance, where I like to see the balance is that when you get, and we talk about rabbis and we talk about imams and we talk about people, you know, in
especially used religion as a thing, but I happen to think the same of doctors.
Yeah.
I do think doctors are worthy of respect.
I agree with you, but I think that's where, as an individual, you take on that role and you take on, if I can say that, title with the level of accountability and responsibility. So the thing for me is that the person the person needs to come out in terms of their values, in terms of their uniqueness, in a sense that they're not just a carbon copy. They're not just a copy of everyone. And that because you're not that doesn't mean that you're less important. And I think that's where, for me, the whole concept of mutual respect and having respect and saying, yes, we do stand up for a rabbi. But then equally what we do is we respect a person that comes into shul every morning and makes a minyan. Because if you look at it in that context.
And unfortunately that's where society goes wrong, is we very often don't respect the person that cleans the church or the person that is in the synagogue or the shul every single day. We don't, we don't give them the same amount of respect. Yeah. It's a very, very difficult, it is a very, very difficult, balance. And I just wonder how exactly we achieve that, because we have this lofty idea of saying that, I need to respect. We need to respect and we need to remove the stigma that if my child or if I want to do A, B, and C and not become the actuary, engineer, doctor, lawyer, then we're going to be okay with that because that's a passion and that's a talent and that's great. But at the same time, there is a reality. Now, I think the only way in which to do that is for the person to have the confidence in their own passion and in themselves. And unfortunately, many 18-year-olds don't have that. I didn't.
No.
You know, I was, I finished my LLB. My BA. I was accepted into an LLB and was offered to study overseas to do my master's in literary theory. But because it was perceived as being a very strange way to live one's life, I never went there. I don't regret it. But it took me a very long time to circle back to find those passions that I lost along the way. But you can't expect a 20-year-old to really have that confidence to say, you know what, world, family, parents, community, this is my passion. This is what I'm going to be doing. Mm. And that's the difficulty.
So in like trying to bring this all together, Howard, I would say that going back to the individual, value who you are and value what you do.
Mm.
And if you value yourself, then you will earn respect from people because you'll demonstrate that in how you do it. So for me, it starts with the individual. You have to really say, well, if I go in and I say, I am only this or I am, you've already undersold yourself. So the point is that start with going and being proud of what you do, even if you think that it's nothing, because each person has a contribution to make, and you need to value yourself. Once you value yourself, other people will start valuing you, but it's about self-awareness.
Mm, absolutely, absolutely right. Fascinating conversation. I really enjoyed it. Zanati, your final thoughts?
The reason why I haven't said much is that also I'm struggling with the balance. Yeah. Because I mean, I obviously also respect titles, but at the same time, I feel like somebody's title does not define them, and you should look beyond the title. But at the same time, we do need to respect people's journeys and what they've had to do, what they've had to sacrifice in terms of money, time and all of that in order to be where they are.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And I'd like to end it with Melinda's point, she says, but basically either way, a doctor of literature isn't going to be able to assist anyone in an emergency. I swear to you, it's just a wonder that I can even hold my head up at all when I walk out of this studio. You know, I might even go for a run now, Zanati. I might even go for a run because I can be whatever I choose to be. It's 9:00. Have a great one. See you tomorrow.